Thanks, Eileen. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Wash your hands.
Good afternoon on this Monday afternoon. If you're in Munster, sorry, it's raining down there already. But the rest of the country seems to be bathing in spring sunshine, which is absolutely glorious. And yesterday as well. I think I got a bit of colour. Why are we obsessed with colour in this country? Well, a bit of sort of red in the face sort of thing. That could be high blood pressure. But I think it was the sun. I think it was the sun yesterday. How are you? 51551 for your texts. If anything on your mind, or ray@rte.ie. Now, you might remember we spoke to Eric Brennan a couple of times over the last few months. He's dad to 13-year-old Sophie, who has quite a rare genetic syndrome, which means that she has scoliosis. And he was on talking to us about the fact that she'd been put on waiting list after waiting list. And then he said that finally Sophie had been put on, she'd got a date. She got a date for surgery. The good news is Eric's been in touch and he's told us that Sophie went down to theatre this morning around 9:10 for her operation. Now, if my memory serves me correctly, Eric would have told us that it's a very involved operation. It's very involved surgery, so she will be there for quite some time. She's still in surgery at the moment. They're not sure if they'll be able to get everything done today or if she'll need another operation, but we're wishing Sophie all the best, and her mum Sam and dad Eric and her sister Chloe and her brother Tyler and all the family. And it's great that Sophie is getting the surgery today that she needs, desperately needs, to treat her scoliosis. So that's good news. That's good news. And it's good to hear good news. Honor Roddy was on the quiz on Friday from Hollywood, down in Hollywood. Hollywood Wicklow, as opposed to Hollywood, USA. And I was talking to her about the fact that there was a sign there. And she said, there was a sign. I said, was there a sign, really? Anyway, she sent us photographic evidence. There she is in front of the Hollywood sign in Wicklow. I was on the quiz the other day, so thanks so much. I was delighted to win the break. For your information, the original Hollywood sign with my sister and daughter, Fiona and Molly, looking down on the village. That's Honor Roddy. My husband was asking after a mug as well. Any chance? You got the break. Don't be greedy. Didn't she tell us that there was a McGurk fella from Hollywood who went off to the States way back and he set up roots in a place and he called it Hollywood after Hollywood Wicklow? That's the way the story goes. So thanks for that, Honor. And of course, we will be doing the quiz later on today. Let's tell you about it now, sure. Why not? Yeah, here we go. Our quiz of today, you know what it is by now. Today is the 22nd of February, and we've cobbled together 10 questions on events that happened on this day over the years. You know, big political stories, scientific breakthroughs, movies, TV shows, songs, theatre, and lots more besides. And we're looking for two people to come on and answer 5 questions each. And there is a prize. This week's prize comes from the K Club. So each day the winner will get a 2-night stay with breakfast on both mornings and dinner on one night in the Palmer, the resort's stylish new all-day dining venue. Excuse me. They'll also spend some time by the water at the K Club, fishing on the Liffey or the freshwater lakes, and the expert tuition of one of the K Club's gillies. They have gillies down there. Woohoo! Pure fancy. Pure posh. With all equipment provided, this is an exhilarating way to spend a few hours and even complete beginner's catch fish in these well-stocked waters. So even beginner's catch fish in these well-stocked waters. I'm sure you have to put it back in, which is fine. Okay, so that's the prize. The qualifying question is this. In which Irish county would you find the town of Greystones? In which Irish county would you find the town of Greystones? 1850, 715, 900. 1850, 715, 900. And we may be talking to you after 4 o'clock. What did you do over the weekend? Do let us know. Ant and Dec was back on the telly, and I was intrigued and very interested to see how they would cope with the whole COVID thing and lockdown and restrictions, because they can't have a live audience. And of course, Ant and Dec's Saturday Night Takeaway sort of feeds off a live audience. Anyway, they had a virtual live audience and it was a brilliant show. Now, they do have £1 million, I believe, for every episode. Yes, every episode costs £1 million. So they have the cash, but they did a brilliant job, and it was very entertaining. And I think they're on for the next 6 Saturday nights, Ant and Dec Takeaway. We also watched The Muppet Show. Myself and Tom sat down. My dad was a drummer. And any time Buddy Rich was on the telly, he'd go, "The best drummer in the world. That man's the best drummer in the world." So I suppose it was sort of passing on the baton of drumming, not that I can drum, but I sat Tom down on the couch on Saturday morning. I said, "Come on, you have to watch this, The Muppet Show, Buddy Rich, best drummer in the world." And Tom's favourite character from the Muppets is Animal. So I don't know if you remember this. It's 40 years old this week, actually, by coincidence. It was first aired in February 1981. Buddy Rich was the guest on The Muppet Show, and he took on Animal in a drum off, or a drum competition, or a drum battle. And it sounded like this. Go on, Animal! And it goes on like that. And in the end, Animal picks up a bass drum and throws it, and it lands on Buddy Rich's head. To which Buddy Rich replies, I'm glad it wasn't a piano battle. There you go. They're there anyway. If you have Disney Plus, all the I think there's hundreds of Muppet shows there. Maybe there aren't hundreds, but there's loads of them anyway from the 70s and the early 80s. Now, the big news over the weekend and the big confusion was Midsummer. You know, we're going to be doing something by Midsummer. And so a lot of people, just like they wanted to know when Easter was, they wanted to know when Midsummer was. So Killian Woods, who's business reporter with the Business Post, decided he'd ask Alexa. You know, he wanted to find out when all of this would be over. Micheál Martin said, you know, something about opening hospitality Midsummer. So he asked Alexa. Killian, take it away.
Alexa, when is Midsummer?
Here's something I found on Wikipedia. Midsummer, also known as St. John's Day, is the period of time centered upon the summer solstice, and more specifically the Northern European celebrations that accompany the actual solstice or take place on a day between June 19th and June 25th in the preceding evening.
Sorry, Alexa, you bored me to tears. So sometime around the middle of June there is Midsummer. But it's not specific, is it? It's not specific. And we don't know because it depends on numbers, it depends on variants, it depends on vaccinations. So as I said on Friday, there is no certainty in this. So we can't demand certainty from our politicians. They just can't give us certain dates. That's the way it is. And we have to live with that. I know it's frustrating, particularly if you're in the hospitality industry and your livelihood depends on this. But that's the way it is. That's the way it is. Something less serious. Danny Connor. He's a photographer and zoologist, and he happened upon seven-week-old baby squirrels, and he had a microphone, and he put the microphone up to the baby squirrels as they were eating, and this is the sound he got. Now, so that's seven-week-old baby squirrels eating. Now, for some people, that's AMSR. You know that we've talked about this before. It's auto-meridian sensory response. People actually sit down and listen to things like that for hours on end and their brain tingles. It's because they get an auto-meridian sensory response. And people make a living out of eating for other people to listen to it. So that's one side of the story. The other side of the story is misophonia. Do you know what misophonia is? That's a hatred of sound, particularly people eating. So I don't know what a hatred of listening to seven-week-old squirrels is. Mrs. Squirrelophonia or something like that. Anyway, I don't know if it even exists. That's the way my brain works. 51551 ray at rte.ie. I wonder, could you ask your listeners why men at this time of year are wearing shorts, yet they continue to wear bulky jackets, woolly hats, gloves and scarves? So here, thanks. That's Matt in County Clare. I think there's something wonderful about wearing shorts, Matt. I get into shorts whenever I can. And I have a bit of an injury at the moment, so I'm walking as opposed to running, but I walk in shorts as opposed to, you know, tracksuit bottoms. So, yeah, and then upper body, you can keep that warm with the, you know, whatever, the jacket and the hat and all that and the gloves, but, you're in shorts. It's sort of it's a defiant statement. It's sort of two fingers to the weather. You know, you might be cold, but I'm going to wear my shorts anyway. Just a hint of something summery. And I see it more and more. And I'd say, well done, if you're getting out in a pair of shorts. But Matt doesn't agree. So would somebody explain to Matt why people are wearing shorts if my explanation doesn't satisfy him? The EU, they come in for a lot of criticism, but they've done something really good. They're going to distribute 60,000 free Interrail tickets to young people this year. Part of the relaunch of Discovery EU programme, it's expected that up to 60,000 travel passes will be distributed. I don't know how you get them, but I'm sure if you go onto an EU website, and it's for people around the age of 18, people who are leaving secondary school before they go into third level. And I suppose it's part of getting the hospitality industry back up and going. 60,000 free Interrail tickets to young people this year. And if you're that age, or if you're a parent of somebody that age, I would investigate that because, you know, it's free. It's free. Now, music. What are we going to go with this afternoon to get you going? We could go with a bit of that. See, I think we might go with that again. Yeah, I think we will. I think we will. You can't get too much of this. And there are people all over the country still learning the dance and doing the videos and following on from Ón Garda Síochána Conna. So, yeah, yeah. Good afternoon. Here we go. Jerusalem on RT Radio 1. You can't help but smile and tap your feet at the same time while that's on. Apologies, Danny Connor is a young female wildlife photographer, and she's the lady who got the recording of the young 7-week-old squirrels. She's very talented, says Eric Dempsey, also known as Birdman. How are you doing, Eric? And there is no certainty about this virus. We all need to remember that, and that there is no way the government can give the dates people want. It is what it is. Which I agree with, but they could do better on the messaging, couldn't they? They could. 23rd of June is midsummer, bonfire night, or bonna, as it's known in Cork. As a child, we lit huge fires in fields. I'm sure it's an old Celtic Druid tradition. And then Philip Nolan said that we will be socialising outdoors. So if we could get the old weather gods to be on our side, we wouldn't mind, would we? We wouldn't mind at all if we got a brilliant summer. To be having barbecues outside and drinking in beer gardens and all that sort of thing. Anyway, yesterday and today, bit of hope, bit of sunshine, bit of vitamin D, getting the old melanin going in the system. All of that's good. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Fergal Quinn has been on saying Neil Peart, who died in 2020 late of Rush, was the best drummer in the world. He acknowledged the influence of jazz drummers on him and has specifically name-checked Buddy Rich, says Fergal. And there's another one underneath that. Hold on. Yep. Tell Matt about the shorts. Simply, when you got it, flaunt it, sister. That's that. That's from Stephen down in Wexford here, who's obviously in a pair of shorts. Now, the third Staying Local Indicator report from the Central Statistics Office was published today, and it found that one third of the country's population are not staying within 10 kilometres of their homes, never mind 5 kilometres. To discuss this, I'm joined by senior statistician from the CSO, John Dunn. How are you doing, John?
How are you doing, Ray? Good afternoon.
Yeah, thanks for taking our call today. Will you tell people about the Staying Local Indicator and how you collect all the information?
Yes, no problem at all. The Staying Local Indicator, or as we call it, the shorthand SLI, provides a percentage estimate of the population that has stayed local over the preceding 7 days. It's actually a 7-day average.
Okay. And how
the perimeter that's used is 10K, and how it's compiled is as follows. It's based on aggregated statistical analysis of anonymized mobile phone activity records, and this analysis is undertaken by Tree Ireland. And then this analysis is then shared with the Department of Health and the CSO. So as you said at the start, It's a good indicator that tells us about our collective behaviours and efforts to stay local when required.
Okay. What are the top line findings from the latest Staying Local Indicator report?
I think the key message to be picked out from the latest report, while the CSO reports on weekly changes every week and how we're getting on, I think if you look at the trends since December, we can see from the 24th of December, our collective efforts in staying local have seen a big rise in the indicator from 51.7% on the 24th of December to 68.6% on the 7th of January. And then from then, our behaviours, the indicator seems to suggest that our behaviours have kind of stabilised at around that 66.66% okay. level since the 7th of January.
But there's still a good chunk, as in a third of people in the state, going outside a 10K limit. Is that worrying? Well, you're a statistician, so you can't really answer that. But
well, I think the most important thing is to remember that the SLI itself is an indicator to give us a sense of how we are behaving and how we are staying local. But the other thing you've got to remember, Ray, is that each county, the degree of urbanisation in a county will have a strong impact, could potentially has a strong impact on how we stay local. Okay. For example, if you look at Dublin, which has a high degree of urbanisation, the SLI is up, stabilised up at around 80%. Uh-huh. But if you look at other counties such as Roscommon, that's still down at around 52%. But if you think about it, how close are schools in Roscommon? How close are the shops?
Yes.
You know, whereas compared to Dublin, everything is, well.
So as people have been saying, John, and I don't, as people have been saying, John, I don't expect you to comment, is that maybe the 5K thing isn't suitable for more rural areas. I suppose the big question for you is, as a statistician, is there a relationship between the number of cases of COVID and, you know, the figure around whether people are staying local or not? So if there are more people not staying local, have the cases of COVID increased?
Well, I think it's not a good idea to bring the two together, because I think when we...
No, he's left the room.
I think what we have to do is, when the case numbers are low, you know, then obviously there's less restrictions. But as the case numbers increase, then more restrictions come into play. And then you see kind of change in behavior with respect to our staying local. Mm. But again, as you said, that's not a matter for the CSO. Those restrictions are what's decided by government as such. But this indicator gives us information about our collective efforts, you know. And again, it's just an indicator, just giving us a representative view about how we're actually behaving. If there's a drop in the staying local indicator, then that would indicate that maybe we're not doing as good staying local as such.
Yes, yeah.
But I think you've got to look at the changes within each of the counties. And all of that information is available on our website for each of the counties as well, if anybody wants to dig further into the data see how their individual counties are behaving over time.
So you mentioned Roscommon already, and so they are the sort of ones most likely to go further than 10K. So it's 51.7% have stayed local. So it's nearly half and half there. And then Offaly are close behind at 57%, and Donegal are there. And these are all rural counties, as you pointed out, so they probably need to travel a little bit further to get essential services or whatever, or shop or go to school. Well, their schools weren't open, so that didn't really matter. So it's all there on the CSO website. Isn't it fantastic, or maybe a bit worrying for some people, that we're being tracked by the CSO because of our mobile phones?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I said at the start, but the staying local itself is based on aggregated statistical information that comes from Tree Ireland to the Department of Health. So CSO or the Department of Health do not see any individual records only aggregated or statistical data that's provided by Tree Ireland.
It's anonymized as well, so there's no, they don't know that.
Yes,
that a guy called Johnny Mahoney or whatever from, you know, Boyle.
No, absolutely.
Went out. No, they don't know that.
It's anonymized and aggregated then.
Yeah. But of course, this sort of information wouldn't be available to you if we weren't all using mobile phones and carrying them around in our pockets. So I suppose that's a good thing, in a way, because this is important information that can feed government policy in the future, isn't it, John?
Absolutely. It's a very valuable source, particularly at the moment when we're looking for information about to help inform the response to the COVID-19 pandemic.
Yeah. And even if there's some fella who's going up and down the country, you know what I mean? And they wouldn't, even if there's sort of an anomaly, a really mad anomaly, they don't do anything about it. It's all anonymized.
No, that's impossible to see that from the data. You can't see anything. Okay. At an individual level, there's nothing at all to be seen at an individual level from the data.
So somebody lives in Offaly there and they didn't perform very well in staying local. If you live in the country like me, the closest shop is roughly 10k. The town for a weekly shop is 14k. Nearest post office is about 9k. And they live in Offaly. The nearest post office is in Leash and they live in Offaly. So that tells you it all there, doesn't it? In that one text, in a way.
Yeah.
It does, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. But you're a statistician, so you can't extrapolate anything from one text. But thanks, John.
Okay.
The broadcaster, the great story, the broadcaster and the statistician. Okay, John Dunn, senior statistician from the CSO. Thanks very much. Thanks, John. Thank you.
All right, take care.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, so it's the SLI, the Staying Local Index, and you can find it on the CSO, which is the Central Statistics Office. And just in case you don't want to bother your bum going there, I can tell you the top three after Dublin. So Dublin, as you would expect, as John said, because it's compact and you don't have to, you know, you've everything on your doorstep, just short of 80% of the people in their sample of people who use the three network stayed within the 10k. After that, Wicklow was in second place. Louth, it being the wee county, you see, is in third place. And then Cork is in fourth place again, a big urban centre there. So that's there. And every county is listed if you go to the CSO. Now, last week, RTE Investigates produced an excellent programme on the third wave of COVID in our hospitals. It was a hard watch. It featured the staff and patients at Talla University Hospital. And one of the staff that stood out when we were watching it was Father John Kelly. And Father John is the Director of Pastoral Care out in Talla. And he's on the line now. How are you doing, John?
Good, Ray. How are you?
Good. Thanks for taking our call today. I suppose we only had to watch it for an hour and a quarter. You have to live it. But of course, that was at the height of the surge and all of that, and it seems like we're the other side now. Is there a sense of that out in Talla?
There is, Ray. Thankfully, we sort of have come a little out of the surge. We're still quite busy. As you know, the intensive care units around the country are still at capacity, and that will be the same here. But thankfully, you know, we are beginning to come out of it. Doesn't mean we don't have sick patients. We have lots of sick patients, yeah.
Yeah, and people are still dying, unfortunately. But for the staff and yourself, people who've lived through this since March of last year, there must be a little sense of, you know, getting through it and coming out the other end.
Well, there is a sense that we are beginning to move out of it. Yeah. However, you know, there's an uncertain future still. You know, who did we know in December that we would face January as we did with such a, you know, huge number?
Well, you could argue we did.
Well, you could.
You could.
But the good thing is, as you rightly say, is that we are seeing less people present themselves with COVID-19.
Yeah.
However, the beds are full with other patients who have other illnesses.
Oh, yes, of course. It's a hospital after all.
You're right. There are signs of hope. Of course, the vaccine is a great sign of hope. But there's also signs, too, that the numbers are decreasing, which is great news for staff who've been dealing with this since this time last year.
Yeah.
You know, we were in preparation at this time last year for what was expected.
Mm. Isn't hope very important, John?
Well, it's the last thing to die. I mean, if you lose hope, where are you?
Yeah.
Where are any of us?
Yeah.
Because hope is what's keeping us going. I mean, you know, the hope that spring has come, and it has come, and there's lots of bright days, and, you know, there's brightness on the horizon. And the vaccine is a great sign of hope.
It is. And you've seen it firsthand out there. Have you been vaccinated yourself? Because you're
I think at this stage, all the hospital staff here in Talla University Hospital have been vaccinated, or at least have received one vaccine.
How was that for you, getting it? How did you know?
I suppose like everybody else, I was looking forward to it because it brings some protection.
Yeah.
It certainly protects you working in this environment. I think Professor Brendan Kelly describes right, the secret ingredient in the vaccine is hope, you know.
Yes, there you go, we're back to that word again.
It's a great ingredient, really, hope. It certainly brought, it doesn't take away the reality of working in COVID-like situations where we have to take the PPE precautions still, and where we need to protect our patients and we need to protect each other.
Yeah.
So what we have been doing remains the same. But however, you do feel that you have more protection as a person, which is very hard.
And I know that as director of pastoral care, that it's not just the patients that you have a responsibility for, it's also the staff.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, Tala University Hospital is like a little village. There's 3,000 plus staff here. So it's a big complex.
Yeah, that's quite
a big number.
That's a big village.
It's a big village. Yeah. And sure, the staff are, it's the staff's great strength and great determination that have kept this whole machine going, kept the whole hospital moving. It's their teamwork, it's their their professionalism, but also their great care, and they're looking out for each other and they're minding each other in the midst of these difficult days. So my responsibilities include the staff, as those the other members of the pastoral care team. We're here for the staff as well as the patients. And
so was there an increase in people coming knocking on your door staff wise?
Well, I wouldn't say it's quite knocking on the door, because we're
present around
the building.
Yes.
Yes, people are turning to you because they're exhausted, they're tired, they have the same fears and anxieties that the rest of the population has, and they're trying to homeschool, they're trying to keep the fridge full, they're trying to come into work and work in these extremely difficult situations. So,
and have you lost members of staff to COVID out there?
Well, thankfully, we haven't.
Right.
However, we have a number of staff who have been seriously affected by it. Yes.
Right. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Tell me a bit about yourself. You came to the priesthood late in life. What age were you?
I suppose I entered the seminary about when I was 23. I'd worked in retail management for a number of years in menswear.
Right.
And sort of came in at 23 and then ordained 91 and went to Dunnecarney Parish. And I also worked in Ord School Reach as a school chaplain for 8 years. And then I came to Tala University Hospital back in 1999, would you believe, a few months after the hospital opened.
Right, so you're 22 years this year.
Or thereabouts. I don't normally mention numbers, but that's it. I'm here since just after the hospital opened.
Yeah. And pastoral care, whenever I talk to people like Sister Stan and Peter McFerry and all that, they got into, the priesthood or the nunhood because they were attracted to pastoral care. That's why they, and they had a relationship with God, obviously, but the pastoral care was the big thing. And they continue to do that now. It's obviously a huge part of your vocation, the pastoral care.
Well, yeah, I mean, you mentioned Stan and Peter McFerry. They work with the homeless, those on the margins of our society. And I suppose for me, caring for the sick is about who I am. You might say it's my vocation.
Yeah.
I was involved in the sick long while I was at school. Actually, I used to go to Lourdes. The guy beside me, his family went to Lourdes as helpers. So I started to go with him at a young age to Lourdes to volunteer as a helper. So in many ways, caring for the sick has been part of my journey, and that's my pastoral care. And I suppose I've been privileged to work here over the last number of years, providing that care, because, yes, there's a faith dimension, but it's a human dimension. It's caring for people in their sickness, in their anxiety. And a large part of my work here, along with caring for staff, is being with people in their grief. Reality of hospital life is that people die. So I journey with people towards end-of-life care, caring for the patient and the family. And then, of course, there are tragic deaths where I'd be with people in the emergency department providing good pastoral care, holistic care.
So you, in your job, are with people when they're most vulnerable?
Yes.
And what do you learn? What have you learned about the human condition from that?
Well, I'm always inspired by, it's very humbling to be with people towards the end of life, just to listen to their story as they try to make sense, as they try to leave behind a legacy, leave behind something for the family to hold on to. Just inspired by their sharing, their honesty. I'm inspired by the strength and the dignity they show towards end of life. Yeah, it's quite extraordinary, very humbling.
And we've spoken to people, we spoke to Catherine Mannix, and she's written a book, With the End in Mind, I think is the name of it.
Yeah.
And she has been present you know, when thousands of people have died. But because you're a priest, I suppose there's an added dimension, isn't there, in that, that people feel they can look for forgiveness in some sort. They can tell you their sins, things that they might have kept secret for their whole life.
Yeah, well, for us, the patient sets the agenda. So in some cases, people will look for some reconciliation. They might be looking for some forgiveness in their life. Mm. So, there's all, and then there's some people who just might like some reconciliation among their family. So you might be a broker between the family, and right. you might be just somebody there to journey with them and maybe make connections with the family, because central to pastoral care is connecting people. So there's times when I'm introducing family members to a patient, maybe because they've asked me to contact them, they haven't seen them for years.
Right.
Recently I introduced patients who his brothers and sisters haven't seen him for years, 20 years he told me. He asked me to make contact with him because he wanted to make peace with himself, he wanted to make peace with his family, and he wanted to make peace with his God, yeah. So it's the patient that brings up their requirements. We accompany them. And I suppose as a priest, I can bring the sacraments of the church. I can bring reconciliation and the sacrament of the sick. But most of the healthcare chaplains here would be non-ordained. And they likewise would bring care and compassion. They'd bring holistic care to the bedside, yeah.
Yeah. And you need a sort of a knowledge of medicine in a way. Because I remember having to deal with a pastor in another hospital, and they had to know that there was going to be an autopsy, and they had to know, you know, what was going to happen, so we could be, me and another person could be talked through it, so we understood what was going to happen.
Yes. Well, we don't work on our own. We work as a member of a multidisciplinary team. So if I'm part of the haematology multidisciplinary team or oncology, I certainly will, you know, have information about patient care. But, you know, there's a great education department here in the hospital, so we attend ongoing professional development. We go to Grand Rounds, which is doctor and other healthcare professionals hearing from other professionals about health and well-being and disease of one kind or another.
Yeah, and speaking of diseases, you know, COVID, like nothing else you've witnessed in your career out in Talla, and an awful lot of fear around it.
Yeah.
Right from the get-go, I would imagine, once people come into hospital with it, they know that, you know, this could possibly end up in death.
You're right, Ray. COVID-19 confronts us with pain and suffering.
Mm.
I mean, every day for the past year, death has been part of our news. Death has loomed near people for the past year. That's extraordinary in ways. And the questions people have, the big questions like, will I get infected? Will I die? People are searching for hope and meaning in the midst of this pandemic.
How do you answer those questions?
Often I don't have all the answers. In fact, very few answers. Most of the time I just sit and listen, just accompany the patients. It's often no words. And then there's times when I'm looking for the right words to comfort them or to assure them that they won't be alone, that they won't suffer pain, because what the coronavirus does is bring mental turmoil and emotional turmoil and some spiritual turmoil for people, so it can be very frightening.
Mm. And one of the things that I read, or maybe you said, is that there was a bit of a myth that people were dying alone in hospital.
Yes, yeah, I fully agree with you there, Ray. Nobody died alone. There was always a staff member with them, and in most cases, family members. Nobody did die alone. However, they didn't have the people they might have liked to have with them, like their own family members. And in many cases in this last past month, family members have been too sick at home to come in.
Yeah.
And making that call to a family and asking them to come in has been difficult, to hear them say, you know, I'm too sick, I can't get out of bed to go in. So it's very difficult to hear that. But you're right, nobody died alone in a sense, but of course, everybody would like to have their own.
Yes. And what about you, John? Because, you know, this has been an horrific 11, nearly 12 months now, and there was a big draw on you emotionally. And how do you take care of yourself?
Well, self-care for all healthcare professionals is so important because we never know what we might experience here. I suppose in Tally University Hospital, we work very much as a team. So I see myself as a member of teams throughout the hospital, and our own pastoral care team and our own students here who are training in healthcare chaplaincy, we work very much as a team and we support each other. Handover in the morning is so important. And in a sense, we almost debrief ourselves going home from night duty or coming on duty just to help each other. And then, of course, there's professional supports like supervision. And we know that we are very much valued by the organisation here. We come under the Director of Nursing. So our Director of Nursing here, Anya Lynch, would be very supportive presence to us, as all the other staff in the hospital would be. So, you're right.
How many people are on your team?
We have a team of 8 chaplains,
Right, and you're the only ordained
chaplain? No, we have another guy. Manus is here with us part-time, so I'm not the only ordained.
So but there are fewer and fewer chaplains ordained, I would imagine. That's the way things
there's
are.
There's less so. It's more and more people who are not ordained, and we have some great young professional chaplains here. I think of Maria. She just joined the team back in December, and she came straight from college, having completed her degree in theology, a master's in scripture, and a higher diploma in healthcare chaplaincy. So, I mean, they're all young, qualified people. Most of the chaplains here would be in their 20s, 30s, and 50s, would you believe?
And we hear an awful lot about people turning to God on their deathbed. Is that something you've experienced?
I can't say they turn to God in their deathbed, but they look for meaning, and they look for purpose, and they look for some sense of the other.
Right.
I can't say there's those exceptional moments where people turn to God. I think if some person has God in their lives, they certainly would want this.
Yes, no, I mean the people who maybe have drifted away from God and then they return on their deathbed. That's what I'm talking about.
Yes, well, I can't say they return, but there's a searching and there's a longing and there's looking for answers.
Yeah.
You do meet people who are trying to bring together their life and ask those big questions about where is God in all of this, and is there a God?
How do you answer that?
Again, it's about listening, it's about being with them, it's about assuring them that the love of their family, that they're not alone, that there is, if they have belief in God, we assure them that God that created them is there with them in their sickness and in their suffering. But really, it's where the person is, and we're not going to go bringing God into somebody's life if it's not part of their journey.
Okay.
However, it's very seldom you meet people who are not searching and looking for some sort of peace, or reconciliation, or answers to that big question.
Yeah, he was a great addition to the Donnycarney Parish and a good friend of Craig Kieran GA Club. A great human being doing an incredibly difficult job. Good luck to him, says Francis Bourne in Donnycarney. And the staff are amazing in Talla Hospital, Dublin, and so is Father John Kelly. They work so hard. Fair play to them, Deirdre Butler, Kells County Meath. And John Kelly, simply the best. There you go. I couldn't sing it for you, John, but there you go. An ex-Talla member, that's Cathy Phillips. And please ask John, what is the patient's most common reaction to dying? You've been there. What is the most common reaction?
Well, I'm absolutely amazed at how they accept what's happening. I've sat with people who've just been told that the virus has taken over their lives. It's more they're thinking of their family, they're not thinking of themselves, which is extraordinary.
Isn't that extraordinary, isn't it?
I've met nobody who's angry or annoyed that the virus has caught hold, and they immediately think of the people they're leaving behind.
Yeah.
It's an extraordinary...
You see, that's I know it's a horrible thing to lose a loved one, but isn't that reassuring? That because basically we're all good. We're all good people.
And love. The love they have for their family is what triumphs. It's stronger than death in a sense,
John, I'll let you back to your work there because I know you're in your office. And thanks so much for taking time out to talk to us today.
Thank you, and good to talk to you.
Yeah, and listen, it goes without saying, but I'm going to say it anyway, thanks to everybody out there. 3,000 staff in Tala University Hospital.
Yeah, it's a big team.
Yeah, and just from watching that, I know that it's been hell for them, but you know, there is the other H word, there is hope.
There is that. We keep that going. We keep that alive.
Okay. Thanks, John. Mind
Take
yourself.
Care. Have a good evening. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Conor Pope is on the line. How are you doing, Conor?
Hi, Ray. How are you doing?
Commiserations. And I know your wife Sonia's dad died there over the weekend. Was it Friday or?
It was Friday morning, and by horrible coincidence, Ray, he died in Tala Hospital.
Oh, did he? Right.
And he died of COVID. And he was, I just want to like pay my respects because he was such a lovely man. And what your last contributor said really echoed with me because, you know, he loved his wife, he loved his child, he loved his granddaughter. And like, you know, at the end, it was all about love for him, you know. And I tell you, we've been talking about the disease for a year on this show and in the Irish Times and everywhere else. And I think so you only really appreciate the true horror of it when you experience something like this. And it was just awful because this day last week, his consultant was super optimistic and hugely optimistic that he'd be coming home. And then within 12, 24 hours, it had just deteriorated and he was gone by Friday. And it's just a really cruel, cruel, cruel illness. And like if nothing else, it serves as a reminder that we still have to continue to take it seriously because it's devastating.
Alan Harris,
and he was a lovely man. And as I say, when he went, he was very fortunate in that he was able to go with his wife and my wife Sonia holding his hand. And that's right. You know, and a lot of people have been denied that in recent times. Yeah. So you know,
and I'm just looking here. He was doing 12,000 steps a day.
The thing is, he was 80, but he was like he was a young 80, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Because as I say, 12,000 to 15,000 steps a day. He was, and the thing that's really like one of the things that's really upsetting is he did everything right. You know, like he had me as a son-in-law and I was telling him from March, don't go out, cocoon. But he was doing that himself and he wore the masks any time he went out. And we didn't have Christmas dinner on last Christmas because we wanted to keep them safe. And despite doing all of that stuff, despite doing everything he possibly could to keep himself and his wife safe, he still got the illness and it took him. And it's just so cruel.
And how did he?
Well, it's you know yourself, Ray. It's impossible to say, but like, given that he wasn't going out, he wasn't going to the shops. He was wearing the mask. All he did was walk the dogs at night to keep himself safe, and even then he'd wear the masks. He had an outpatient's appointment in a hospital in early January. So if you were to pinpoint something,
maybe
it would be
that. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, well, our thoughts are with Sonia.
Thanks very much. She'll appreciate that.
Yeah, and you, obviously, and the rest of the family. And may you rest in peace, Alan Harris, there.
Absolutely.
I was reading your piece today, which is a fascinating piece. I wasn't familiar with this politically exposed person thing before.
No, neither was I, right? I'd never heard of it.
Right.
And a reader contacted us in connection with Revolut, and his card had been blocked. And he started getting these messages from Revolut going, can you tell us if you're related to Eamon Ryan? And he was like, what? Why do you want to know that? And they said, no, can you tell us if you're related to Eamon Ryan? And this over and back went on for days and days and days until eventually they locked his account because he just refused to answer whether or not he was related to Eamon Ryan, the Green Party leader.
Yeah. His surname was Ryan.
His surname was Ryan. Now, I know his first name, but I'm not going to reveal his first name because that's not neither here nor there.
Yeah.
And eventually, you know, so he had no idea what happened. He was locked out of his Revolut account for the guts of a fortnight. And I contacted them and they said, oh, yeah, that's because Eamon Ryan is what's known as a politically exposed person. And under money laundering legislation, we have to establish certain things in case the person who's on our Revolut account is linked to Eamon Ryan. And there's this really convoluted thing. And I was just thinking, like, if you're a politician and your name is Murphy, Jim Murphy.
But Ryan is a very common name as well.
Ryan is a very common name.
Revolut has 1.2 million customers in Ireland.
So
surely there must be more Ryans.
Must there be?
Yes.
And I did put that to them. I was wondering how many people with a similar name had been similarly blocked, but they haven't really gone into that detail. They're just saying they're following the rules.
I'm just thinking, O'Brien. Like there's O'Brien is a common name. There's a
absolutely
Dara O'Brien.
McDonald.
O'Donoghue.
But the funny thing is, it doesn't just impact on senior politicians. It goes all the way down through the ranks. And as I say, it was brand new to me, and it was brand new to most of our listeners. But you can read the full, almost comic detail of it on the Irish Times website now, and it's just bizarre, frankly. And I plan to do more on it because I think we need to learn more about this particular story.
Hello, Revolut here. We're just wondering, are you related to the Pope?
Oh well.
Yeah, sorry about that.
It's the first time I've ever heard that joke, Ray.
I know, but it was. Come on, for topicality, you have to give me a few marks for that. You have to give me a few marks for. Come on,
I'll give you 4 out of 10.
Okay, right. Now, This came into pricewatch at rte.ie, and if you have a consumer issue you want Connor to grapple with, that's the address, pricewatch at rte.ie. Dear Connor, I was an Air customer for fixed line broadband, landline and mobile. Broadband speeds were poor in my area, so I called to see if fibre was coming. They offered me a 5G wireless solution and said if it wasn't better I could return it. This was early September 2020. That's the door. It was better, so I thought I was all set. Over Christmas I discovered through one of my children that the old broadband was still active, so I started calling again and again and again. A number of times I did get through and explained the situation. I was told someone would call me back. No one called me back. So I tried calling again. Eventually got through, and after explaining everything, the call dropped. When I spoke to them, they admitted that the broadband should have been cancelled but disputed the landline situation. They said they would credit me with the difference between the two broadband services, €20 per month. They have been charging me approximately €50 per month for a landline I requested to be cancelled back on September 30th, 2020.
Sounds complicated, but the bottom line is this person was paying for two different services from Air at the same time, despite the fact that he'd asked for one of them to be cancelled. And what we've heard here and what we hear on many occasions in connection with Air and indeed with other companies is the very difficult time people have trying to reach resolutions. So this was a cut and dry case. He rang Air, said, listen, when am I going to get fibre broadband? They said, we can't get fibre broadband to you at the moment, but you can try this 5G network. Try the 5G network. The 5G network was better than what he had, so he switched. And he even remembered, because I was speaking to him, he even remembers saying to them in Air in September, well, sure, we never use the landline anyway.
Right.
So why would we have that? So he got rid of it. But for whatever reason, and mistakes happen, we all know that, Ray. Whatever reason, the landline contract wasn't cancelled, which means from September, October, November, December, and it's January, you're looking at maybe he was paying an additional 300, €350 for his landline, despite the fact that he thought it was cancelled. And he was also paying for the fixed line broadband, despite the fact that he thought that was cancelled. So he thought, like, he was basically had paid €450 more than was necessary. And what we've seen over and over again is the difficulty people have getting resolution to these things. Now, like, it should have been no difficulty for the company to listen to the calls to confirm that he'd in fact cancelled the landline and the broadband and to refund him the money. But, you know, the way he tells the story is like he'd be on hold for like 40 minutes, then he'd get through, and then after 15 minutes, just when he was getting to the nub of the problem, the phone line would go dead and he'd have to start all over again. So between the jigs and the reels, I was in touch with Air on Friday. They looked into the case. They've agreed that there was problems. They made mistakes. They've apologised to our listener, and they're refunding him all of the money, the landline costs and the fixed broadband costs, and they're giving him an additional credit to cover the costs of his 5G broadband for a little while longer. So again, the problem has been resolved, but you just have to ask yourself, are we ever going to get to a point where we never hear from broadband companies, or we never hear from the customers of broadband companies or telecoms companies? And sure, what would we talk about then, Ray?
Yeah, but we have been told that Air are sorting out things.
Yeah, and we have to give them the benefit of the doubt. I mean, they are acutely aware that there's problems, you know.
Yeah. And their CEO, Carolyn Lennon, has come out and said, you know, hands in the air.
And she appeared before an Oireachtas committee in which she appeared to slag off Sligo, but that's a long story and I don't want to get into that. But she has admitted that you know, there was problems and she was taking full responsibility for it. So I guess we just have to.
I remember years ago, Connor, you were on way back years ago, and NTL was in the same position as Air's in now. They were just constantly been, you know, and every week we were doing two or three NTL.
That's correct, actually. Yeah, and you know, it does go on. Sorry,
go on. No, but finally, the CEO of NTL actually came on. And he answered people's questions. So maybe
well,
Carolyn Lennon.
Well, you should invite Carolyn and Lennon, see if she'll come on the show.
Well, if you're listening, Carolyn, you're invited onto the show and we'll give you a good 45 minutes and we'll let people talk to you and you can talk back, and that'd be a good public service broadcasting, wouldn't it?
It would. I listen in, Ray.
Well, maybe you can moderate it or something. Or you?
My dream come true.
Anyway, but you're obviously keeping a close look on them to make sure that what they've promised will be delivered.
Yeah, and we'll keep an eye on it. And sure, we'll see what happens in the future.
Yeah, yeah. And commiserations again, Conor.
Well, thanks a lot, Ray.
And thanks for being on today. And we'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you next week. Take care. Bye-bye.
Anish Toshin, I'm the Fiv Skelton in Oakdale. Marion Nihulawan. Gurmagad Marion, thank you very much. 51551 or ray@rte if you want to contact us this Monday afternoon. On John Kelly, John visited my mum on her final day. The three words he said to her, be not afraid. I hope she heard him. And John was with us in the final hours of both our dad and mum dying back in 2013 and 2016 in Tallaght Hospital. He was brilliant and so thoughtful, along with his pastoral care team. We wish him the very best. And just to say, I read the book with the end in mind after hearing your interview with the author, Catherine Mannix. I thought it was an excellent read and would certainly highly recommend it. I think you mentioned it in your interview with the chaplain from Tallaght Hospital, says Emer. I did, with the end in mind. And re-politically sensitive names. I opened a credit union account last Saturday and one of the questions was whether I was related to any politicians. We're going to have to do it's politically exposed person is the term they use. We're going to have to get to the bottom of this and get somebody in from data protection or whatever to explain why this politically exposed person is so important when it comes to credit unions and bank accounts. Drummers, Ginger Baker, best drummer in the world. And Francis Ngova says the clothes dried outside today. That's the first, isn't it? Tony Williams was one of the most amazing drummers ever. He played with Miles Davis. But check out Tony Williams' Lifetime, mind-blowing, says John in Cork. What else have we got there? If you live in the country like me, oh, I read that out, didn't I? Shorts are ridiculous looking with a jacket. When I was young, the cringe factor was men wearing socks with sandals. Wearing shorts with trainers are ridiculous looking also. The feet are the prominent feature of vision and look like clodhoppers, says Mary. She's not too happy. Offaly is a geographical anomaly, 10 miles from everywhere, says Tony. And what percentage of these movements are work-related and how do they know if someone is travelling for work or not? Well, they don't really, because it's anonymised and aggregated and all that sort of thing. So they don't know that, but they just know that people are moving and they know which counties they're moving more and which counties they're moving less in. Now, hit that thing. There we go. It's time for our quiz of today. Today being the 22nd of February, 2021. That means yesterday was the 21st of the 2nd, 21. So 21 to 21. Right. Anyway, we have a prize as well. This week's prize is a good one. The K Club each day. The winner will get a two-night stay with breakfast at the K Club. And they also get dinner on both mornings and... breakfast on both mornings and dinner on one night in the Palmer. The resort's stylish new all-day dining venue. And they also get fishing lessons from the resident gillies. All the equipment is supplied and they nearly guarantee that you might catch a fish. So thanks very much to everybody out in the K Club there. On the line we have Matthew Kennedy. How are you doing, Matthew?
Hello, how are you, Ray? How are things?
Good. You're on the road.
I am indeed. Well, I'm parked up here now at the moment as we speak. So.
Good line.
Yeah, so, thank you.
So do you work from Ferns or do you live in Ferns or both?
I work in Ferns for the Bulger family. They have a hardware store there in Home Value Hardware in Ferns.
And you're from Carnew?
I'm from Carnew, right. Yeah.
And what's the distance between Ferns and Carnew?
It's about 10 miles roughly.
Ah, that's not too far.
No.
So you're on the road dropping off building material?
Yeah, blocks and gravel, anything to do with building, you know, timber, anything to do with plumbing, carpentry, like that.
And although construction's been shut down, certain sites are still open?
Well, yeah, council sites still open, and anything to do with hospitals, anything to do with, you know, stuff like that is open. And then some private building still continues.
Right. Does it?
Yeah, you know, people will be building the garage themselves or whatever.
Ah, I see, yes. So there'll be no outside contractors involved, it'll just be doing it themselves.
A lot of it's the stuff that we would supply would be for DIYers, you know.
I'd love to be able to build in our room myself.
Well, I tell you, it's not something I can do either.
Is it not? No.
Not really, no. I could talk all the talk, but then doing it is another thing, you know.
All you need is to download that app, that Spirit Level app on your phone and you're away.
I don't think it's that simple.
No, I know it's not.
No.
Who's at home, Matthew?
Carolyn, my wife, and then I have Connor, Roisin, and I have Grace.
Right.
And then, unfortunately, we have two little angels, two Aoife and Anya.
Because I don't know if you've been watching Operation Transformation, have you? I don't know if you have.
I have indeed, yeah.
Yes. So your story is not the same, but similar to Hazel.
Hazel
lost Niamh and Chloe. And what age were Anya and Aoife when they lost them?
They were both 5 and a half when they passed. Well, Aoife was involved in an accident and poor little Anya then got a virus. Anya was special needs.
Right.
But we actually brought her to China because we'd done stem cell treatment with Anya.
Right.
And she came back and then they always told us that she would be non-verbal, but she actually started to speak afterwards. And she used to say, mammy, daddy, bald baby, and stuff like that. So she was coming on great, and she was in great health. But unfortunately, one morning I wrote down, and she had a virus, or she had a temperature, rather, and unfortunately we lost her then shortly afterwards.
Sorry to hear. And yeah. That would have been big news at the time, wouldn't it, that Anya went to China for a stem cell?
Yeah, well, because it was kind of not something we wanted to talk about at the time. It was kind of, you know, because a lot of people didn't believe in stem cell treatment at that time, but I think it's getting more and more research now, and people are kind of having more and more faith with it, you know. Yeah.
That's and both of them the same age, different years. So Aoife died in 2006, and then Anya in 2010. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, and they're both buried together over in Annacurra, in a beautiful little part of the world over in Annacurra there, near Ockham, and that's exactly the church actually where we were married.
Right.
And the graveyard is next door to it. So they're both buried there.
This is a big question, Matthew. But you know, we had John Kelly on earlier on, and Conor Pope has lost his father-in-law over the weekend. How has that coloured your life, losing two daughters, you know,
our life is never the same, you know. It's never the same for the family either. It's just not the same. Yeah. I mean, even last night, myself and my wife were watching a film about a poor little girl that got a chronic disease with her stomach, and she actually, it's based on a true story, it's on Netflix. I can't for the life of me think the name of it. But I was giving out to my daughter for letting myself and my wife watch it. And
why would you watch it? That's the question.
Yeah, no. But the end, you see, there was a miracle, and she got totally recovered, and the doctors couldn't explain it.
Right.
And I would be a person of great faith myself. I mean, I pray every day to my angels, as far as I'm concerned. And I would have faith, like, you know. And some people would kind of, I suppose, sneer at you for that. But I do have faith, you know.
Right.
And it just gives me peace by talking to them or whatever.
Yeah,
there's
a chat. There's a constant chat.
Every day. And every night when I'm going to bed, I'd have a little chat with them. And I'd always say to them, like, keep mum and daddy safe and your brothers and sisters safe. And, you know, let everyone be happy and healthy, please God, you know.
And they are happy and healthy. They are the Conor and Roisin and Grace. Roisin's doing the leaving cert, is she?
She is indeed. We've got to be here anymore with leaving cert.
So what is she opting for? Is she going to go with the predictive? Calculated grades?
Calculated. I think she's going to do both, I think. I don't know. She's actually intended to do the leaving cert anyway, you know. But
okay.
She wants to do teaching, so she has to get as many points as she
can. Sure, if you're going to do the leaving cert, surely you should sign up for the calculated grades as well.
Well, that's it, exactly. Yeah. But that's what I'm led to understand is you can do.
My understanding as well, I'm sure this is the case, then you can pick the best result in each subject.
That's it.
Well, they deserve a bit of a break because it's been...
It's
been hell. Right.
They're good kids. They're good kids.
Okay, Matthew, you're up against Norma Herlihy in Mallow. How are you doing, Norma?
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Good. Now, you're a teacher in senior infants.
Yes, I teach in Drumahan National School.
Right, and all the talk is that senior infants are going to be going back first in primary schools, aren't they?
We're hoping we'll be back next Monday.
Yes, yeah. And when will you know?
Tomorrow. We're waiting on an announcement.
Yeah, so the cabinets are meeting later on this evening, is it? Or tomorrow evening, or the cabinet? Anyway,
heard in the news we're going to find out tomorrow. We can't wait.
Okay. And obviously you'd be hopeful that you'd be back next Monday.
Yes, the children would all love to be back in school with each other.
Yes. It's all about interaction, social interaction. You know, it's so missed, isn't it?
Yes, they really miss their friends.
Yeah. And you see... Who would have thought that? Well, you would have known it because you're a teacher, but like it's become so obvious, hasn't it? That's such an important part of school. Like the learning's important as well, but the social interaction is probably more important for that age group.
It is, absolutely. They really miss playing outside in the yard with their friends and having fun doing group work.
Yeah.
It's not the same at home.
No, and you have three of your own.
Yes, I have Jack, Shun, and Nessa.
Right.
Jack is in fifth class, Shun is in third, and Nessa's in play school.
Right. And how was the homeschooling go for you? Because they'd be expecting very high standards.
And I don't know about that now, Ray, but it's very busy. They work in their bedrooms, but we have to check their work, and I'm downstairs at the kitchen table teaching on CSO.
Yes, so you're God. And then your husband's working from home as well, I believe.
Yes, he's up in the bedroom. He's working from Macomb.
And all on broadband. How's that working out for you?
It's okay. We're very lucky that we have fibre and it's holding up so far.
Oh, you have fibre, right. Oh, yeah, then you're good. You want to say happy birthday to somebody?
Yes, Richie Ryan, my brother, his birthday is today. He's 40 today.
Right. Was he named after Minister for Finance?
No.
Wasn't there a Minister for Finance? Yeah. They used to do a character in Halls Pretoria Weekly called Richie Roon. That was the character. Yeah, you're too young to remember that. Anyway, there you go.
I don't.
You don't? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You're too young to remember it. Okay, now it's Matthew Kennedy in Carnew and Wicklow up against Norma Herlihy in Mallow, County Cork. If you say good luck to each other, that'd be great.
Good luck, Matthew. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay, here we go, Matthew. First question for you, and good luck. On this day in 1495, French King Charles VIII entered Naples to claim the crown. In what European country would you find Naples?
In Italy.
Yeah, that's a correct answer. Norma, on this day in 1746, French troops conquered Brussels. In which European country would you find Brussels?
In Belgium.
Yes, that's the correct answer. Second question for you, Matthew, is an audio one. Have a listen to this.
It's okay, I didn't get it the first time either.
What?
There is no secret ingredient. It's just you.
On this day in 2009, at the 81st Academy Awards, that movie about a martial arts loving bear was nominated for Best Animated Film. You heard Jack Black there as Po in the film. Can you name the film?
Kung Fu Panda.
Is the correct answer, yes. Norma. Yours is an audio one as well. Have a listen.
I taught him how to talk now. He can talk now. Elliot. Look what he brought up here all by himself. Elliot. What's he need this stuff for?
On this day in 1975, Drew Barrymore, American actress, was born in Los Angeles, California. You heard her there as a child star in which 1982 film about a boy who befriends an alien?
E.T.?
That's the correct answer. That was a great clip, wasn't it? Now, Matthew, question for you. Question number three. On this day in 1922, the UK issued a unilateral declaration of Egyptian independence. The flag of Egypt is a tricolour consisting of three equal horizontal bands of red, white, and which other colour? Black or green?
Green.
No, it's black. It's black. There you go. I would have said green as well, but there it's black is the correct answer. Because I checked that again with David upstairs. Okay, yeah. Norma, your third question is this. On this day in 2014, Viktor Yanukovych was ousted as president of Ukraine by the parliament. The flag of Ukraine is a banner of two equally sized horizontal bands of blue and what other colour? White or yellow?
I'm guessing this time. I think it's yellow.
Yellow is the correct answer. Right, so three plays two. Your fourth question, Matthew, is an audio one. Have a listen. Because I gotta have faith. On this day in 1989 at the 31st Grammy Awards, that singer won Album of the Year for Faith. Can you name him?
I can name Michael, but his surname, no. Michael, I can't think of the surname. Not that for my life, no.
No.
Sorry, I can't. No, just
I'm going
Michael.
To David there. He has Michael. Yeah. Nothing there. Nothing coming.
I'm going to kill myself afterwards because I've heard that question so many times in quizzes.
Yeah. Norma, will I give it to him? That's not fair.
No, it's not fair.
No, okay. I can't take it. Yeah, it's George Michael. George Michael.
Michael, yeah.
And even if you said that Michael was the surname, I might have given it to you, but you were saying that Michael was the first name. So,
see. Okay, fair
okay.
enough.
Okay, now, if... Norma gets this one right, Matthew, that's you. Done.
That's fair enough.
Okay, well, let's see how she does. Norma, it's an audio one. Have a listen to this. I'm your private dancer, a dancer for money. Do what you want me to do. I'm your private dancer, a dancer for money. Now, still with the 31st Grammys on this day in 1989, that singer won Best Rock Vocal Performance. Can you name her?
Tina Turner
is the correct answer. Yeah. There you go. With a song written by Mark Knopfler, I think. Sorry about that, Matthew.
No problem.
Listen, mind yourself. Take care.
Okay. Thank you very much.
And thanks for the chat. And we'll send you out a couple of mugs, maybe. That'd be fitting, wouldn't it, after our conversation? We'll send you out two Radar Show mugs. Okay, thanks,
thank
Matthew.
You very much.
Bye now.
Thank
bye.
You.
Bye.
Bye.
Norma. Well done, Norma.
Thank you very much.
You're off with a person of your choice to the K Club. For a two-night stay, breakfast on both mornings and dinner on one night, and you can go fishing with a ghillie.
I'd try that.
There you go. Enjoy that and well done. Mind yourself.
Thank you very much.
Okay,
Ray.
See you, Norma.
Take care.
Bye now. Bye. 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 Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Very shortly, we're going to be meeting the Mahonys from Wexford, winners of this year's Ireland's Fittest Family, and their coach, Davy Fitz. But first this. Clean Bandit featuring Jess Glynn. and Rather Be on RT Radio 1. Mary Carter was a winner on the quiz a while back. She's from Kildare, and she just dropped us a text to say that she hasn't used her weekend away at the K Club and she wants to give it to Matthew, who was our runner-up today. Well, runner-up is a nice word for it. That's a lovely gesture, Mary. Thank you so, so much. And I know Matthew will appreciate that no end. So thank you for that. That's lovely. Now, they're celebrating in the county of Wexford because the Mahonies, Ireland's fittest family, as crowned last night on the TV, are from Wexford. And they're on the line. Well, half of them anyway. We have Joanne Mahoney. How are you doing, Joanne?
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Congratulations. And we have eldest son, Kevin, on the line. How are you doing, Kevin?
Hey, Ray. How are we going?
Good. Congratulations. And we have the very excited coach, Davy Fitz. How are you doing, Davy?
I'm a bit better today, Ray. All good.
Yeah. It was sort of meant to be, your connection with Wexford and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, we got over the line. It was pretty exciting. I watched some of it back last night and it was pretty epic looking at it. You didn't know which way it was going to go. But in fairness to the family, they were incredible at the end of it.
Okay. Henry. For people who didn't watch it, so the Mahonies consisted of Joanne. You can give your age if you want, Joanne. Or
53. Right. Right. Okay. I'm proud of it.
Yeah. And then Kevin, you're 23, Kevin. Alan is 17, yeah. And Connor's 19. And Joanne, tell us about Tommy, your husband.
Yeah, Tommy unfortunately couldn't be in it. I mean, he was dying to be in it from the very start. But you had to have one woman on the team, so that was me. And the three boys definitely wouldn't give up their place on the team. So, unfortunately, he had to watch it from the sidelines.
Right. I'd say that killed him, did it?
Oh, absolutely killed him. He was devastated. I haven't heard the last of it, Ray, to tell you the truth. But he's getting over it now slightly since we won, you know. Otherwise, he'd be telling us he could have won it for us, you know, that sort of way.
€15,000. That's a nice prize.
That's a lovely prize, it is.
Yeah. So does that go straight into your account, Joanne? Is that what the way does it work?
It has. It is going straight into my account, but unfortunately I have to divide it by four.
Oh, do you?
So
right.
The three boys want their share and they've already planned what they're doing with it. Right. And I have to share mine with my husband.
Right, so, okay. Davey, what was it about the Mahonies? Like, obviously, Joanne she was the glue that held the team together, wasn't she?
Without a shadow of a doubt. Like, I think even if you asked Joanne, I don't know, was it about 3 months before the show she only started running? Like, you know, she's involved in gymnastics and all that, but the lads probably so anxious to do it, they got Joanne out. But I'll tell you, Ray, they're a family that never will give in to anything. Yeah. The spirit they have and how they care about each other is just incredible. And that was one of the reasons that I would have picked them at the start.
Yeah. Kevin, you literally, with your brothers, dragged your mother through some of the courses.
Yeah. We obviously knew coming up into the final that is a very tough event coming up. So we knew that we were going to have to help Mother. The whole show is kind of about your weakest link.
Right.
So we had to get her over the line and that was the end of that.
There was some classic Davy Fitz coaching there, wasn't there? Did you make up some of that stuff, Davy, that they were laughing at them? You were saying to the Mahonies, they're laughing at you, they're laughing at you. I didn't see anybody laughing at them.
Did you not see the way Dunners was after the first race they won, no?
No, was he laughing at them?
Oh, was he? What? He was giving it to us.
Was he? Right.
Oh, and but it was great.
And then you said to Joanne, they're saying you're the weakest link. They're saying you're the weakest link. But that's all part of the motivation, is it?
Well, to me, you need something all the time. Like, you have to find something, right? I'm not going to say whether it's true or not true, right? But listen, to me, the best thing when you're competing, Ray, is you need that little nugget. Like, you need something to give you that edge, you know? So whether it's true or not true, it worked, you know?
It did work. It did. You drove them on. You drove them on. You were hungry, Davy Fitz. You were very hungry.
That's to put it mildly. Like, there was 3 years there. I got to the final two and I was pipped by the narrowest of margins. You know what? And I think this is the thing. Like, okay, you didn't get there. You had to come back again. You didn't get there. You have to stay with it. And be it anything in life, Ray, you're going to get knocked down, but you have to keep coming back. And that's why, isn't that feeling incredible when you have it? And that's why I was so happy for the Mahoney family as well that we got there.
Yeah. Joanne, were you delighted you got Davy at the start?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, from the very start, there was no question about which coach we wanted. I mean, never mind the boys. I mean, I was looking forward to Davy as well. He's so passionate and, you know, he just drives you on. So definitely he was the one for us. And we were absolutely thrilled when we found out that he was our coach.
And are they going to be talking now around Wexford about omens and all that sort of thing, are they?
Oh, I've seen there on Twitter, you know, that that's it. Now, this year, never mind, bit of family, Wexford versus Tip, you know, when it comes to the hurling, when it comes to that, yeah. It's going to be Wexford first as well, you know. This is a good omen, definitely, good omen.
Yeah. Ye wouldn't have been favourites at all, would ye, in Ireland's fittest family?
I don't think we would have been, no. You know, straight up. I mean, it was the very first challenge that we had to do. I mean, we nearly didn't get through the very first round.
Well, that's where you had to balance on the branch of a tree or something, was it?
Yeah. And unfortunately, I mean, it was more to do with my heights than my balance. I think I just didn't like heights. And luckily enough, the boys were strong enough to bring four bags around at a time. And, you know, we just pipped that one. And then I think after that, it kind of gave us the confidence to move on.
Yeah.
And just to move on and to do better each time.
Well, you did brilliantly, and congratulations. And if you didn't see it, you have to watch it back on the player, the final of Ireland's Fittest Family. It was a brilliant season this year, and I know that more and more people watched it because they're in lockdown, but obviously because it was a brilliant series as well. And Davy, tonight it's the final of Davy's toughest team, so you're all over the place.
You'll be rid of me tonight. No, that's the end of it.
No, look, again, I've seen it because we had you on at the beginning with Connor, and so I've seen it, and it's a brilliant episode tonight, where the lads take on Cairn Toole, and there's a good bit of Davy shouting, but there's lots of drama there as well. So that's well worth a watch. It's on at 9:35 tonight, and you can watch Ireland's Fittest Family back on the RT player. Davy Fitzgerald, thank you very much. Joanne and Kevin Mahoney, well done again. Yay! Congratulations.
Yay. Thanks very much.
Bye.
Thank you, Ray.
Bye.
Thank you.
That's it from us. We are back tomorrow at 3:00. Cormac and Sarah are on the way. And as I said, we are back tomorrow at 3:00. Where's that one? This one, there. We'll do it.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Wash your hands.